What's up, Gator Nation? Welcome into the latest Gators Online show. Zach Albaverde and Nick Del Torre here. Back at it as Florida returns to action Saturday in the Swamp against UCF. Not the Central Florida Golden Knights, apparently. Don't call them that. They don't want to hear it. But we'll talk about that matchup this week. We'll also get a lot into the bye and kind of some things that we learned from Florida's break, what they did during their week off, and what that could mean for Saturday's game as we kind of see where this team can improve after the first month of the season. We missed you guys last week. Unfortunately, we got hit with a storm and had no power. So we're back running. I hope everybody out there that's listening around the country is doing well and recovering. If you were impacted by the storm, the worst storm I think I've ever seen in terms of the impact that it had across the nation, and you know, seen flooding and stuff in beach towns, which is terrible. But to see the flash flooding that happened up in Tennessee and North Carolina, it was crazy. So thinking about everybody that's been dealing with that, fortunately, we get to return to football this week, Nick, and see another in-state matchup in the Swamp, which is great.
Yeah, I think at one point UCF were the Golden Knights of Pegasus, which honestly, that's a dope name. Like not taking any shots at UCF there, a school I went to, but like dope name. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting this week. This was the longest. I'm from South Florida, but the house I grew up in was built after Hurricane Andrew, so very strict construction guidelines, standards after the devastation that Hurricane Andrew caused. The longest I've ever been without power, and was not prepared in the slightest. Thank you, Elon, for the Tesla. Wife and I thought we're in North Central Florida. You know, we can just hunker down in our rural basement and we'll be fine. slept in the Tesla, was able to keep the babies. Was able to keep the baby's temperature regulated, almost like camping in your garage. But yeah, thoughts and prayers to everyone, especially up in that North Georgia, East Tennessee area who typically don't get storms like this. We're kind of used to it here in Florida, but some pretty devastating pictures that are coming out of those areas. So hope you get power soon and your life gets back to normal a little bit.
Yeah, man, it's it was crazy to see the devastation that came from that. And obviously for Florida, they didn't have a game and we were kind of able to hunker down and just try to get power back. And, you know, High Springs got hit pretty hard out where I live. And it's just it's crazy to see what happened. But nonetheless, Florida needed a bye week and they needed some time off, not only to get guys back off of injury, which still don't know what that is going to look like. We'll talk about that a little bit on the episode. But Florida made some changes during the bye week. Did some things differently. Did some things that you don't normally see. And at the very least, definitely there seems like they're trying to make an effort to, as Spurrier said earlier in the season on one of his podcasts, Nick, you know, do something different. And switch it up, you know. And maybe they've done that. Nick, you wrote a story off of Monday about their unique approach to the bye week, and it felt like almost like spring ball out there, it looks like.
Yeah, interesting decision to do that considering how banged up you are, but I like it. Get competitive. Split the team up into two. Nobody likes to run after practice and to put gassers on the line for all the team stuff that you're doing, and you've got your team split up. That's good. I mean, one source I talked to said it's been the best five practices of the year, the three last week and then the two leading up to when I talked to them heading into the UCF game. Kind of at the point, though, Zach, where I'm just like, cool, sounds good. See you Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, it's – and he said that during those comments about – hey, now we got to go out and prove it and show that the things that we try to do to get better actually improved us. And I do think, though, that if they would have, to use his word, coddled the guys during the bye week and let them have an easy week and let them just kind of go through the motions, especially coming off of a win at Mississippi State. That's not what this team needed. It's definitely not what they needed on defense. And I don't know whose idea it was to split the roster and to have like a spring camp like week, but it sounds interesting. All the players seem to like it. So we'll see what that does to the competitiveness on Saturday. But it was, to your point, Nick, they said it's been their most competitive week of practice dating back to the bye. So that was something that was notable that came out of this past week. I do think maybe a little bit more important was what we learned about the defensive issues, Nick. Obviously, they went into the bye needing to solve some things on that side of the ball and figure out what was the issue. Like, why do they keep having these drives where they disappear? Mississippi State was able to run some tempo on them and really have success. And then, you know, we heard from Bridges after the game, Nick, and then heard from Jason Marshall on Monday, who was informed about Bridges' comments. And, you know, we heard from both of those guys and I guess learned, I mean, I guess you could see it out there during the game in Starkville, but like these guys were having trouble getting lined up before the play. They were not getting either the signal or they were getting the signal, but weren't getting that call communicated amongst themselves. And to use the quote from Jason Marshall, there were times where they were just standing around looking for the signal. And to hear something like that from your senior cornerback in year three of SEC play is alarming. And something that they worked on, they emphasized hard during the bye week because that they felt like those were the reasons why they had those issues in Starkville defensively. And they're going to see more tempo.
Glad they're getting it taken care of just in time for the season to start. And that's kind of why, like, I'm sitting here and, like, everyone's talking about, like, the bye week is so good. This week of practice is so good. It's like you had a great spring, according to you. You had a great fall camp, according to you. You worked out harder than you've ever worked out in the summer, according to you. So, like, talk's cheap. It's crazy to me that you've made – this is your third in 3 years, your third different play caller, but you keep saying it's the same system. So why is it that you don't know how to get aligned if you're in the third year of a defensive system? So to me, it seems like a lot of dysfunction.
And I will say, Nick, you remember they had this issue with Grantham. Guys not getting lined up pre-snap. I mean, it's not a Florida player issue, but we have seen this happen before, and we've seen the results that it leads to.
Well, defense is reactionary. You're reacting to what the offense is doing. So getting aligned is just your first step. Like, hey, this is where we need to be aligned based on what they've done. Like, hey, we now in offense are trying to get into good situations. Like, hey, if they sub somebody on in offense and brought a fourth receiver on, and the defense didn't catch it, and now you've got an extra linebacker on the field. Well, shoot, now we have to have a linebacker aligned over the slot guy, and we have to try to figure out what we're going to do because we don't have the right personnel on the field. So getting aligned, you get kids in peewee football aligned to start a defensive play. And we're talking about guys who are 18, 24 years old, 29 if you're the Miami tight end, years old. It's just stuff that it can happen. It can happen during games and in situations for them to point out, and maybe they're just lying and covering it up. And this isn't really an issue. And they just want to say this because it's easy to say.
No, it sounds like an issue.
I'm giving them, play devil's advocate, I guess, give them the benefit of the doubt to not be able to get aligned in year three of a defense after four games and to have it happen in week one and then probably not week two against Sanford, but week three and week four, it's just like, what are we doing here on October 3rd? Shout out to Mean Girls.
And when it's going to get worse, because as good as Jeff Lebby is with his offensive attack and his up-tempo pace, UCF and Tennessee are better. And yeah. Ole Miss is the best at it. Although they're coming off of a loss Shout out to Lane Kiffin. But
listen, Lane's going to fit right in. Recent Florida coaches love losing to Kentucky.
Oh man, don't go there, Nick. We're not to Kentucky week yet.
Sorry,
we're trying to get through UCF week. But look, I mean, I appreciate the honesty from Marshall and Bridges, but again, those are alarming comments, and you know that they can do what they did during the bye week to try and improve it, and we'll talk about one of the things that they did do that we learned on Wednesday night, but. Just for that to be admitted and for that to kind of be the what they feel like is the root of the issue so far, it's alarming because I don't know what you can do to improve that, especially as the teams are going to keep running tempo against you. But Florida did try to do something about it, like the unique approach to the bye week that they took, splitting the rosters up into two teams and having them basically have a spring ball-like by they also mic'd up their players in practice and not just the quarterback and inside linebackers who've been mic'd up all season with the new in-helmet communication. No, they decided to mic up also the center on offense, but then the signal callers on defense, the inside backers and the safeties. And they not only had them mic'd up on the field so that they could hear each other, but then they would take their audio from that mic'd up, and they would take the video from practice and then basically pair them together so that they could watch the highlights of them playing with their audio synced up. A very interesting practice that they put in place to try and improve the communication on defense. And I thought the key quote from Napier was, being able to see who does a great job and who doesn't do a great job. Who is not getting that message clearly or those calls clearly, who's communicating the wrong things to his teammates. It would be fascinating to get on those headsets, Nick, and to hear them discover, here's what's being screwed up here. Maybe that tells them who should be playing and who should not be playing, which we'll get to a little bit as well. But what'd you think about them being mic'd up in practice, and what, if anything, can that do to help identify their issues?
I think that's a great teaching tool, both for the coaches and also for the players. I've seen like a lot of NFL teams and some college teams putting GoPros on quarterbacks, like right on the top of their, like in between their eyes, right on the top of their face, like attaching it there. And that's to be like, okay, as a coach, I'm really only looking at it from the sideline or if I'm on the field, but I'm not looking through my quarterback's eyes. And that's kind of, the GoPro, obviously your eyes can scan without you moving your head, but you're getting the best look. If you're asking your guys to communicate and then you're running 60, 70 plays in practice, and then you go back to look at them, well, why did this happen? Well, now we have audio of here was the communication. This is what happened. From the play being signaled in to communicated to the other guys to execution. And hey, here, boom, we can easily pinpoint something. So, yeah, I think that's something that every team should do. If you have the means and the capability, which Florida certainly does, that's something you should be doing in the spring, in the summer, in the fall. Anytime you're running practice, I think that's a valuable tool.
And I think it was good hearing from Jack Pyburn. First, it was just good to hear from him. He's got a great story. And he's, fought his way back from an ACL injury. But also hearing, what he appreciated about the mic'd up situation. Because it seems like the coaches might have proved a point to some of the defensive players because they wanted them to listen to the mic linebackers and all the responsibilities that they have every single play pre-snap and how much – they have to take in from the coaches on the headset and then how much they have to then communicate it to the defensive line and to the safeties. So when their teammates can actually hear that in real time and hear all the stuff that they're having to process, like, dude, you've got no excuse to not get your one call or your one signal that you need at your spot. Like,
yeah,
these guys are having to do three or four things before the ball is snapped. So I can imagine that was probably beneficial, an eye-opening for some of those guys.
Yeah, there's no hiding. There's no hiding from that. Like, you can tell the coach, oh, yeah, I made the call that maybe they just didn't hear it. And then you get yelled at for, well, you got to be louder. And then you go back and coach has got the receipts now. Coach has got the receipts now. You didn't say what you were supposed to say. You said nothing. So, yeah, like I said, good that you're doing it now. Would have been cool to do it in March. Would have been cool to do it in August.
Do it after the Miami game.
Better late than never, but like you're 2-2, 1-1, and trying everything. Like, good.
Yeah, they're trying everything.
Keep trying new things. You know, don't say that Billy Napier's coaching for his buyout. Because they're trying everything. They're trying everything. It would have been like super dope to try that in the spring, in March, sure. when you were doing spring ball, to kind of learn that. Would have been super dope to do it in August.
And to your point, Nick, he did say that they've done it before, but they've done it with like rookies, with like isolated situations where they put it on one player who needs it and they need to hear.
Yeah, I think all the players need it, Zach. Yeah. I think every single player needs it.
Yeah. I think that they've learned that. And
maybe you need Joe Houston to be the defensive coordinator. My guy has just got special teams in tip-top shape.
Yeah, they don't need any help or changes right now in that phase of the game. They've been doing well, knock on wood. But look, Jack Pyburn and Pup Howard – both said that it helped. They said it made guys more accountable. To your point, Nick, they can't hide anymore. And maybe they discovered some of the guys that were screwing things up and from a communication standpoint. And they've either addressed it or they've known that now this guy is continuously having this issue and he can't handle it right now. We got to put somebody else there. We'll see what that leads to. But that, you know, kind of brings me, you know, into our next discussion, Nick, and you know, before we do that, I want to get to this first ad read.
I gotta get to this ad read first.
Right, go ahead.
I'm wearing my shirt right now. It's got Ben Hill Griffin Stadium on it. It is from Roback. There's only one way to describe Roback. It's the best fit, best feel. For those who aren't familiar with Roback, they are completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. Roback just released their new licensed game day collection, and it's awesome. I'm wearing it. I think Zach's got one as well, with novel polo designs, a clean hoodie, quarter zip designs for some of your favorite schools. It's definitely worth checking out. Nobody else on the market is pairing these levels of custom designs with this quality activewear. Roback's everyday shorts, which they sent us a couple before, I think last season, that I still wear to games, and as well as their pants. Are the perfect pairing. They're comfortable, have an elastic waistband, and a great fabric that's made to have the appearance of a nice short, but the comfort of an athletic short. Roback has also been proudly leading the NIL charge, having signed partnerships with college stars like Jalen Milrow, Quinn Ewers, Caleb Downs, among others, and they're becoming the go-to brand for college athletes. Use the code GATORS20 on Roback.com for a generous 20% off for all new customers. Now, that is just new customers through the end of this week. That's called or spelled Roback, Roback.com. And that's 20% off of all the performance polos, which you see me wearing, and shorts with code GATORS20.
Yeah, check it out. We've gotten rave reviews from some of our listeners who swear by Roback. So check that out. Take advantage of the code as well. And, we'll see if Florida can take advantage of the bye week to evaluate some things. Obviously, they split teams up, mic'd up players in practice, but also did a lot of personnel evaluations. And as Napier said, took a good look in the mirror. And the comment that he said that a lot of people stuck to is, you know, maybe we need to adjust who's playing and who's not playing. And we did a deep dive on that at Gators Online the past couple weeks. Power ranking the players on offense and defense, me listing three guys I think need to play more on both sides of the ball. And then we got to hear from Napier this week about some guys that actually have earned more playing time. He divulged some names. But as we get into this, Nick, on offense or defense. And, you know, also we learned a little bit about the offensive line as well in that rotation. But is there anybody in kind of your work the past couple of weeks that jumps out to you as it relates to this conversation of guys that you feel like need to be on the field more for Florida? You're muted.
I think when I was going through and doing them, Jason Marshall really stuck out to me, but like he's playing almost every snap. I think he's having the best season he's had in orange and blue. Jake Slaughter is jumps off the page as a guy who I think we were all probably ready to like write a transfer portal story before last year or at some point before Kingsley went down last year. Good and he's point. Turned into Florida's best offensive lineman. I've been saying that Austin Barber needs to just stay on the field unless he is hurt and or needing oxygen. But Florida's kind of – and there's been a lot of pushback and jokes to the story I wrote on Wednesday about Florida sticking with the five. But if you just open the link and don't just read the tweet, you'll see the snap breakdowns there. And you can see that they've, for the most part, stuck to those five. And Austin Barber is playing more and more reps. The one that I feel like pounded the table for has been Aaron Gates, but I think Sharif Denson with Aaron Gates being out, I think Sharif Denson played really well. Yeah. So those two guys, and then I guess Aiden Mizell, you know, with Eugene Wilson returning to practice, he was in a non-contact jersey on Wednesday night, out of his non-contact jersey Wednesday night, excuse me. I still want to see Aiden Mizell if he's healthy. Can he still play and can he still be a contributor? Can you get him and Eugene Wilson? I know they're playing similar positions, but like,
yeah, they play the same position. Yeah.
Can you get them in a different position? So I think Aiden Mizell is a guy that, you know, kind of sticks out to me. And then the folks down in Tiburon, down in Central Florida, gave our boy Jacoby Jackson a plus 11
that's right. point
upgrade in the video game. I'm sure he got some text messages yesterday. No longer in the 60s.
Yeah, they tried him.
Mid-70s player now. You know, it's just interesting, the running back rotation. I don't think Montrell Johnson is going to see a chunk taken out of his reps. How did the reps shake out with Jaden Ball, Traylon Webb, and Jacoby Jackson? I think KD Daniels is certainly the low man on the totem pole.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, he'd be a redshirt candidate at this point. I mean, why burn a year of his when you don't need to? And Nick, that was three players that Billy was willing to divulge on Wednesday night. He said all three of the running backs have earned more reps and more opportunities. Who gets those each week is kind of varies depending on who has the best week of practice. But all three of them have earned the right to get more touches. And so that's something that I think to look for. To me, you know, I think Traylon Webb has consistently been viewed as the backup to Montrell, and mm-hmm. I think that he's solidified that. Like, he's really looked good with his opportunities. I think, again, Jacoby Jackson has been the surprise of the position, and every time he's gotten his opportunity, he's done well. But it's just something about number 13, man. Like, he might – maybe he's like the weakest pass blocker and knows the playbook and the responsibilities the least among the guys, but you just got to keep finding ways to get him on the field. I mean, he leads the team in yards per carry. You know, he's only got 10 carries on the season, but he's almost got 100. That 32-yard run that he had against Mississippi State, he looked fantastic on. So he's one guy to me that I would like to see Florida play more or just try to find ways to get the ball. And obviously I agree with you on Aiden Mizell. The one guy that I was I wrote and kind of lobbied for, and I think the grades, the PFF grades support this, but judging by Napier's comments on the SEC teleconference Wednesday, it looks like their starting five, which they've started consistently pretty much now, are going to get the lion's share of the rotation. And maybe they're not going to keep rotating at left guard as much as they've been doing the past couple games, because Najee Harris and Bryce Lovett in the last couple games have been pretty similar in their snap counts. And again, just based off the PFF grade, Bryce Lovett has outperformed Harris so far. And not only has he outperformed him, but he's been one of the team's best pass blocking linemen with an 88.3 grade, which is very good. Whereas Harris is Florida's lowest graded lineman out of all of them. So that was one where, hey, like, it kind of doesn't make sense why they were rotating so much. But then you see that Lovett was actually outperforming Harris. And I guess I get it. Like, they saw that Lovett might be doing better in practice and therefore been giving him reps on the field. But now they might be scaling that back and just sticking with Harris. I don't know if that's the answer. They're both redshirt freshmen. Like, not one guy deserves the right over the other. Like, it should just be who's the best. So we'll see if that continues. Nick, if you'd read his comments, though, he did leave a little wiggle room and say the Caden Joneses of the world and the Bryce Lovetts of the world will be the ones that still get to rotate. But I just thought that that's something that was interesting.
Well, yeah, it's listen, he was also asked if he's had any talks with Scott Strickland about his future. He said, no, nothing out of the ordinary. So you're still walking a fine line. Like I've mentioned with Graham Mertz and DJ Lagway, you're still walking a fine line. Like, Brandon Crenshaw Dixon's gone after this year. He does not have any eligibility left. Jake Slaughter could end up being one of the top three centers and get a first or second or third round grade and might decide to leave a year early. Austin Barber has made it very clear. I think made it very clear before last season that he wanted to go to the NFL after the 2023 season.
Yeah.
And I think if it's possible for him, he would leave early. So you need to get Bryce Lovett, Fletcher Westfall, Caden Jones, those guys reps so that they're not, you know, I think Caden and Rod Kearney has 13 reps. I think Caden's got 9 and Fletcher's got 9 that, you know, all came against Samford. It's like, you've got to find opportunities to get them reps. You had that opportunity because you had a lead against Samford late. You did not have that opportunity because Mississippi State kept it close. Your defense allowed Mississippi State to continue to score and keep that close. I don't know that there will be more opportunities, but if you're looking towards the future, those are going to be the guys you're going to count on the offensive line. You'd like them to get more than a handful of reps. So, yeah, I think picking spots to get them opportunities, but a lot of what dictates that is the game and the ebbs and flows of it and not putting a freshman in at right tackle on a drive where maybe you're up 7 in the third quarter. Like, that's not the time for Fletcher and Caden to go in there. Hey guys, go in there and cut your teeth there.
I'd have to go back and watch, Nick, and really go play by play with the series that DJ Lagway has received. But I do feel like the opportunity for guys like Jaden Baugh, Bryce Lovett, to get opportunities on the field, Aiden Mizell, will be the drives when DJ is in the game, because it seems like they have also played some second team guys when DJ is in the game. Maybe just out of familiarity with him repping with them so much in the spring and fall, because it seems like often when DJ is in the game, Jaden Baugh is in the game. And are you just doing that because they've done so many handles in practice that, you know, and then is Lovett, is that his opportunity to get in the game because he's repped so much with DJ? Who knows? But that's something to monitor. I think the bigger question and I think the bigger personnel changes that might need to happen are on the defensive side of the ball. We've wrote about some guys, Nick, but one that Billy has just come out and said right out of the gate that he's going to get more snaps and sounds like he might even be in contention to start over TJ Searcy is Jack Pyburn. You know, Billy praised him after the Mississippi State game for the way that he played, having 2 stops during that goal line stand. And then once again, when asked what defensive players have earned potentially more playing time, Jack Pyburn was the first and only guy that he listed off by name. So that might be something worth monitoring, Nick. Obviously, really cool for Jack if he can produce and get that chance, because he's fought back from a lot, and we got to visit with him on Wednesday night and seemed like he was in good spirits.
Yeah, he's played in 3 games. I asked him a question, you know, because a lot of guys, sometimes you'll see like a running back come back from an ACL and be like, I didn't want to wear the knee brace, it's bulky. I always ask, like, I wonder, maybe it's just me being weird. And I was like, hey, is that like physical because it's restricting or mental? And he's kind of like, it's more mental. It's both, but it's more mental. It's like, it's a constant reminder when you look down or when you feel it that, hey, you tore your knee up. And you don't need to be thinking about that. So I think as he gets further and further removed from that, we're not even a year removed from him tearing his ACL, and he's played in three of Florida's first four games.
He says he was back in 6 months.
That's wild. I mean, he's a madman. I'm watching him. I remember why he started posting clips on Instagram and me thinking, like, I think he's doing too much too early. That's a lot. I typically don't see guys split squatting on their bad knee, you know, 3 months after surgery. But I'm not a doctor. Didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn last night. But yeah, it's impressive. I don't know. I think TJ Searcy has a higher ceiling. I think he's a better player, that he's more talented. And if it's close, that you play the younger player with a higher ceiling. But I don't want to take anything away from Jack Pyburn. I think he's clearly a competitor, just the way he attacked rehab and the job he was able to do to get himself back onto the field.
Yeah. I will admit that I definitely kind of counted him out as a contributor early in the season because of the injury, and he's proved me wrong just by how quick he's been able to get back. And it sounds like he's going to be a little bit more involved at that Jack spot along with TJ Searcy and George Gums. I mean, hey, maybe the Jack spot was made for Jack. We'll find out if he can get more playing time on Saturday. He's really the only one that it sounds like is like for sure in line for more playing time. You know, two guys that I mentioned in the secondary, Traquez Bridges and Dijon Johnson. I think both of those guys, I think Bridges needs to be starting at safety with Castell. And I think that Dijon Johnson needs more opportunities at corner because he's looked good with the ones that he's gotten. And Florida's still struggled to kind of get consistent play there opposite Jason Marshall. And then, you know, at linebacker, Nick, Billy came out and said that Aaron Childs and Miles Graham are both kind of progressing and have a role in the defense. Pup Howard said that as well, like that those guys are part of the game plan each and every week to get on the field, to have some type of snaps that they're going to get. But, you know, honestly, another young linebacker is Jaden Robinson. He actually leads the team on defense with a tackling grade of 86.2. He's been really solid. Just off of grade-wise, he and Pup Howard have been Florida's best linebackers, according to the PFF grades. So,
Shamar James is ranked in the 300s in the nation in terms of linebackers.
Yeah.
What's the guy that we thought was going to be Florida's best linebacker? You're absolutely right. I think Jaden Robinson, Pup Howard have been great. I think Dijon Johnson has Florida's best coverage grade.
He does.
According to Pro Football Focus.
Yeah. And then, you know, something that Napier said, not only just as part of this conversation, but just in general, that they need to generate more of a pass rush on defense. Even though Aaron Childs is a linebacker, I think that he's a guy that can help with that. I think they can put him on the edge and have him do some things rushing the passer that I think he's going to get opportunities to see the field strictly based off of that. And look, right now, Florida's starters at the edge position for all the games so far have been Cameron James and TJ Searcy. And just in the pass rush conversation, they actually have two of the lowest pass rush grades on defense, 54.8 and 54.5, respectively. So Florida's not getting a pass rush, and those two guys have not provided it thus far. Tyreek Sapp has actually been Florida's highest graded player on defense, and he's not been starting at the F spot. Cameron James has been getting the start over him. But he's actually been very effective so far. And then LJ McCray, it seems like, is a guy that is also kind of chomping at the bit to get more playing time and is probably going to get more opportunities. But those are some of the names, Nick, that I think that we've heard about, or certainly that Billy has mentioned to maybe watch for as they try to get some better results on defense. Got to try something different.
Listen, it's such a low bar that you could trip over it on accident. So getting a better result on defense, not asking for a lot.
No. I think that obviously the bye week came at a good time for this team. They've tried a lot of new things. And, look, they are going to have to show improvement and be better on Saturday against UCF because this team is explosive on offense. They're going to be tough to stop against the run. And that's something that Florida has not been able to do so far this year. Before we get into our preview of Florida UCF, want to give a shout out as we do each and every episode to MyPerfectFranchise.net. If you're ready to leave the corporate rat race for the American dream, looking for a side hustle while working your current job, wanting to diversify, build wealth, and or leave a legacy, Andy can help. He's a franchise consultant as well as a franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at MyPerfectFranchise.net or calling or texting him at 404-973-9901. And, Nick, it is time for Florida UCF. These teams last met in 2021 at the Gasparilla Bowl. The Knights got the win, so a little payback is needed for Florida. Some of the players that were on that team are still on the team. And Jason
Napier was on the field that night.
He was.
As the coach named a weird bookends to his career to have two losses to UCF, I guess, starting and ending his tenure.
Yeah, that would not be good. This is an important one for Florida, not just because of that game in 21 and needing a little bit of payback, but obviously for the state of Florida's season, the state of Florida's or Napier's tenure, and what's next. This is a must-win game for them. There's no way around it.
Yeah, must Gators, win or is a must not lose?
We get back into that. I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think he's reached must win territory. Like, I don't know that he can survive a loss at home to UCF or a loss at home to Kentucky. I think either one of those next two games, he can't afford to lose. And maybe I could be wrong. Maybe he could lose one of those games and he still gets to finish out the season and gets all 12 games to prove himself. But man, that is going to be a tough one for the fan base to take if they can't be either one of those teams. I think either one of them.
A lot of it, I was talking with some of the students and interns that work at Florida with it last night after we were leaving Billy Napier's press conference. And I said, back in June, I said, like, hey, I might talk myself into picking UCF. And them being either current students or former students were like, what do you mean? UCF can't beat Florida. And I'm like, well, that's just your mentality. The transfer portal, Gus Malzahn being their coach, this isn't the UCF that Florida played when, like, Tim Tebow was there.
Yeah, when they won 42-0.
When it's a bunch of, like, two-star, three-star kids who nobody else wanted. These are a bunch of kids who are good. RJ Harvey ran for 1,300-plus yards last year. KJ Jefferson already has a win in the Swamp. They've done a great job of building their roster. I think UCF might have advantages on both lines of scrimmage. Like, yep. This isn't a just UCF, but I totally get the Florida fans' perspective. That's little brother. Like, we don't think about you. You're constantly like a little chihuahua nipping at our heels, and it's annoying. Go away. That's not this UCF team that's coming into the Swamp. So, our program. Yes, UCF can absolutely beat Florida physically on the football field Saturday. This isn't the UCF of old. But I get the standpoint that you should never be at a point to lose to UCF. I understand that, but I'm telling you, it's a very real possibility.
Oh, it is. It definitely is. And the fact that we're having this conversation and that it's a competitive enough matchup that the Knights could win just shows you how far UCF has come as a program and how far Florida has fallen as a program. Because the last time these two teams met in Gainesville in 2006, the Gators won 42-0 and won the national championship.
Not this year.
And since then, UCF has allegedly won a national championship.
I mean, listen, even going there, come on. Let's be real.
But nonetheless, they're in a major conference now. They've got big-time players. They recruit the state at a much different clip than they used to, and they have enough talent to come into the Swamp and win this game. And the fact that we can even say that, and Florida is having the type of season and the type of program that it does where it has, you know, regressed to the point that a team like UCF can come here and get a win is a sad state of affairs, Nick.
Well, see, to me, I think it's – yes, listen, is this a juggernaut Florida team? Far from it. But I think it's more of just who the head coach is at UCF and the nature of college football, with the transfer portal being a thing. Guys are looking to go places. KJ Jefferson could not, in 2006, leave Arkansas, leave an SEC program, and be back in the Swamp 7 months later, quarterbacking a different team. So a lot of it is, yes, Florida is down. Florida has been down since
2010?
With a speckling of a couple good years, has been down since Tebow left. There have been some good years. I won't take that away from the Gators, but for the majority of the time since Tim Tebow left, it has been down. Since 2013, we can say it's been down. But I think while that is true, I think it more so is just the nature of who's leading UCF, getting a name like that at a program that I thought when Scott Frost got there, I thought he should stay because there's too many kids in the state of Florida for the big three schools to get. And then you got kids going to Georgia Tech and going to Auburn and going to North Carolina. And you can just say, like, listen, mom can literally get on I-95 from Miami and be at our game every single Saturday. And you don't have to make her drive up or try to fly and go to all these other places. Stay at home, win at home. And every once in a while, we're going to play Florida State. We're going to play Miami. We're going to play Florida. And you can show them that they should have offered you a scholarship. I thought if you got the right coach, and Scott Frost was killing it until he decided to go to Nebraska, where I don't think anyone will ever win again. So to me, it's not so much as like, this is because Billy Napier has run Florida into the ground, so much as UCF has a big name coach, and it's an era where big name coaches can attract all different kinds of players. It's not just having to recruit whatever the big three have left in the state of Florida.
Sure. And to UCF's credit, they've been on that, like you said, they've been on that ascension since the Scott Frost era, and obviously continued it with Josh Heupel and have kept it going with Gus Malzahn. So a lot to look forward to in this matchup. I think as we talk about keys to the game, Nick, numero uno is defending the run against this UCF attack that ranks number two in the country currently at 326 rushing yards per game. Nick mentioned RJ Harvey, over 1,300 yards rushing last year, already up to over 500 this year and 8 touchdowns. They got a couple other backs, Boone and Montgomery as well, that are talented. And, of course, KJ Jefferson, the dual threat quarterback that can do damage on the ground, as Florida found out in the Swamp last season. The Gators have been getting gash up the middle. Nick, their run defense has not looked good. How in the heck did they stop and slow down this UCF attack, and can they?
What did I say last year, Zach? In the nome de Padre, de Cinco, and the Espiritu Santo, amen. You start praying because you've been atrocious. Now, UCF's run offense does take a hit, like nearly 100 yards against conference teams. which was TCU on the road, and then the blowout last week to the Colorado Primes. They're only averaging 233. Now, they are one-dimensional. They average 49 rushes a game against conference opponents, and then average 52 a game total. So you need to make them one-dimensional in the other dimension. You need to stop the run and force KJ Jefferson to beat you with his arms. That was the blueprint last year against Arkansas when KJ Jefferson was here. He, very big arm, doesn't always know where it's going. Can turn the ball over, will have a low completion percentage if you force him to sit in the pocket like Dan Enos did. By the way, the only guy who could stop KJ Jefferson last year is on Florida's staff. He'll be up in the box. Maybe he gave him some tips over the last 10 days. I just don't have any faith in Florida being able to stop the run as you pull up their rushing defense. And if you go versus 1A opponents, just taking out
Samford,
who had no interest in running, Florida's giving up 231 yards a game, 4.82 per carry, 6 rushing touchdowns. They've given up nearly 700 yards in 3 games against Power 4 opponents. Florida has not, cannot, and until they prove me wrong, will not stop the run.
As Billy said, we are who we are.
Great week of practice, though.
Yeah, and I asked him what can they do to stack the box more within their scheme to try and slow down the run. And he gave us the, you know, if you stack the box, your coverage is now cool. Susceptible.
What Colorado did last week was Travis Hunter. And listen, Florida doesn't have a Travis Hunter. Nobody has a Travis Hunter. That kid is a monster, a freak. I look forward to watching him every week. My guy's playing like 110 snaps a game on offense and defense. Travis, you got one of the receivers on the outside. I don't even know who their other cornerback is. You're putting guys on islands.
Romani McClain. Oh, no, never mind.
No. You're putting guys on islands, and you're saying you're playing man-to-man. And, yeah, listen, when you're playing man-to-man, that you become more susceptible to a quarterback run because now you've got your secondary with their backs to the quarterback, and that's something you need to have a spy on the quarterback, a linebacker. But that's the answer. The answer is not to play zone. The answer is to play man-to-man and commit to stopping the run. The answer is there. It's like then it gets down to the buzzword of the season. Can you execute it?
Yeah, we'll see if Florida can stop Trevor Etienne on Saturday, according to Billy.
Yeah, probably not.
If you guys didn't see that, Napier, without naming Trevor, compared UCF running back to Trevor Etienne, RJ Harvey. And honestly, if you watch his highlights, it's a pretty good comparison. He even wears the number 7 that Trevor had at Florida.
Dude is good. One of my sources texted me after the last question. I didn't know it was going to be the last question because I asked Billy what running back did you coach that he reminds you of, thinking it can only be Naquan Wright or Trevor Etienne. And he said that, and my source texted me and goes, "That's nasty work asking that at the end of the press conference." I was like, I was just asking for clarification, man. Could have been one of two guys.
Hey, I wrote a story about it, so I appreciate it, Nick. I needed the clarification. Well, we know Florida's got to try to stop the run. What are your other keys to this game, Nick? How does Florida win this game in your mind, outside of stopping the run?
Yeah, I mean, if you can stop the run, I went back and I was looking at like stats that popped off the page to me, turnover margin. I mean, Asa Turner, who obviously has been hurt, said, "We have to run if we don't get 3 interceptions a practice." The season started off great. Second drive, interception. Shamar James gets his hands on the ball. I'm thinking, man, that Kool-Aid they were selling, I don't know if I bought enough of it. Florida has a -4 turnover margin. They have gained that one interception, which is on the second drive of the game. And they have gained 2 fumbles.
Yeah, they rank 114th in turnover margin, 111th in takeaways, and 113th in interceptions.
Better than Auburn. Auburn somehow has a negative 11 turnover margin through five games, which is just phenomenal. I think you have to go out of your way to try to have that bad of a turnover margin. Florida is, and fans won't like to hear this, I've said it multiple times throughout the offseason now, this is going to be a close game. You're going to have to win the turnover battle. And I know you don't want to hear that Florida UCF is going to be a close game, but I'm anticipating that it's going to be a close game. And if you go out and you give KJ Jefferson, drop a pick and give them another set of downs, or give them another chance to extend a drive, you're not going to win this football game. You have to get off the field. Florida has been non-existent on third down. Only team worse than them in the SEC is Mississippi State. Florida is allowing their opponents to convert on third down 46.55% of their attempts. I think they're not good on fourth down either. Yep, last in the SEC. Opponents are 4 of 5. On fourth down. So just getting off the field. And we've talked to Billy about that. You know, I think Graham mentioned it and Billy mentioned it. They kind of sound just like the same person. You can almost just have Graham show up for Billy's press conference and it would sound the same, which is good media training, good quarterback, always having his coaches back there. But like, man, we only had 12 plays. Yeah, you only had 12 plays because your defense refused. Like a kid refusing to give up the ball on the recess yard. Like, no, this is mine. Wait your turn. I would like to play 93 snaps today. Don't need to get off the field. Trying to get my NIL game up. Need more TV time. Let's play some more defense.
That's not a recipe for success.
It hasn't been.
And look, in every matchup, in every game, this is always a key. You got to stop the run. You got to be able to run the ball. I don't know if Florida's going to be able to do either one of those things. I don't know if they're going to be able to stop UCF's run game. And UCF actually has the number one rush defense in the Big 12 right now. And they rank 11th nationally. They're only giving up 80 yards a game. Now, I don't think Colorado tried to run it all that much against them. But that is something that they also do well. And to your point, Nick, about them at the line of scrimmage, like that goes to show you right there. For me, because of that, yeah, Florida's going to try to establish a run and they're going to get their backs involved. But like, I think the opportunity with this defense is going to be to attack them through the air. They rank 106 nationally in pass defense. We'll see if Florida gets Trey Wilson back. But even without him, I mean, the Gators rank 30th nationally in passing offense. They've been pretty good with Lagway and Mertz since they started that two quarterback system. To me, you got to protect Mertz and Lagway. You got to air it out. You got to attack them through the air and try to give yourself an opportunity to run that way and protect your quarterback. UCF has not been able to get to the quarterback. They rank 132nd in the country in sacks. So they have not been able to get pressure on the QB. And to me, just looking at the numbers and how these teams match up, Florida's got to just try to not take water and with the rush defense, try to get enough production with the rushing offense to keep them honest. But I think there are some matchups to be exploited and some production to be had in the passing game. You got to build off of that performance that you had at Mississippi State where you were really sharp throwing the ball. And showcase that in the Swamp on Saturday night. I think that's a key to a win.
Yeah, Colorado, worst rushing offense in the Big 12. But they won at both lines of scrimmage. They protected Shador, which they don't ever protect Shador. And they stopped and won up front on defense. Like I said, I don't know that Florida has the advantage on either line of scrimmage this Saturday.
And made a bunch of plays in the passing game. Had guys, yeah. I mean, Shador was lighting them up, responded from that early pick. So, look, Colorado kind of gave the Gators the blueprint on what it takes to beat this team. They hadn't taken a loss until they faced the Buffaloes. So, we'll see what happens as we are back in the swamp Saturday night, night game. Looking forward to that and seeing if the Gators can keep the Central Florida Golden Knights in their place. We will.
It's just disrespectful. They asked very kindly and politely to be called the UCF Knights.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
UCF Golden Knights of Pegasus.
This is your name, bro. This is your school, fire so I shouldn't disrespect my wife.
Fire name.
My wife went to UCF as well. So, all right. Well, we will see you guys on Saturday night, late Saturday night in the swamp. We'll be doing a rapid reaction. I hope you guys are. Yeah, it'll be late. Hope you guys are up. Look for the notification. We'll promote it, and we'll see you guys from the swamp. For Nick Del Torre, I'm Zach Albaverde.